Hello and welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast presented by Speedmaster.
At the eighth mile, she's leading Bo Buckner at the finish line stripe. It's Cameron Caruso for the first time. 6.592.
This week, we're taking a deep dive into the wild intake manifold controversy from Funny Car in Charlotte.
And there goes Gage Herrera. Vinny, Vidi, Peachy. He came, he saw, he conquered.
A look inside the situation you won't get anywhere else.
Chad Green's out first by a bunch. They get to the finish line stripe, and it's Chad Green. 391.6 on a whole shot, a 33 line.
This is the NHRA Insider.
Into the night they go, and the wind light comes on for Doug Collada. 367.3, 334 miles an hour.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the NHRA Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Loans. Of course, the podcast presented by our friends at Speedmaster. You can check them out at speedmaster79.com. Loads and loads of parts for your project car, whether it's mild or wild. They can pretty much supply you with anything you need. So check them out at speedmaster79.com. A little bit of a different format show this week. So Charlotte was a great race. We had all kinds of good competition on the racetrack. Going to talk a lot about that. Really, on next week's show, we have time before we go to the Route 66 Nationals, so we can kind of explore the race in different ways. But, you know, the biggest thing that happened over the weekend, I think, for a news-making moment, if you will, was the big controversy that broke out on Saturday involving Bob Tasker III, the intake manifold on his Funny Car, and then everything that kind of went along with it. And I want to dive into this situation because it was incredibly unique how it happened, and then how the news was broken was kind of a first in NHRA history, and then the resolution of it. I want to go through all of these elements, and I want to have a kind of look at it in a very circular way. We're going to look at a bunch of different elements of this, and in the end, you can agree or disagree with me, but in the end, I'm going to kind of tell you why I'm glad this happened, and maybe why you should be glad that this happened as well, especially in the way that it happened. So that's going to be that. Next week, again, we'll go through the race. We'll talk about those teams that are performing, those teams that are kind of lagging. But, you know, as we know, Gage Herrera gets the job done on his motorcycle. We know that Justin Ashley, once again in Top Fuel, is looking almost unstoppable. We look at Nitro Funny Car team Matt Hagan pick up his 50th career victory. And then in Pro Stock, Greg Anderson wins the, you know, the hometown race with his HendrickCars.com Chevrolet. So four great stories there, and those will be the topic of next week's show. But for this one, it's going to be about Saturday and really a less than 24-hour window where we went from seeing Bob Tasker III be a number two qualifier, make a great run on Friday night, to a guy that was very angry. And I had a whole lot to say to us on our NHRA Insider live show on Saturday morning. And then ultimately would go on to win the Mission Foods Challenge with borrowed parts, resetting the track record by more than 2 miles an hour. So on a speed side. So it was a wild pendulum swing back and forth, both attitude and performance wise. And certainly there was a lot of elements that went into that, which some of which we understand, some of which I have concrete evidence of, and some of which I don't. And I'll go through all the elements of that as well. But, you know, I think the first thing that needs to be explained for anybody that missed the memo on exactly what happened here was, so Bob Tasker makes his qualifying run on Friday night, qualifies in the number two spot, great run. Then, unbeknownst to Tony and I, as we're doing our NHRA Insider live show, the tech department is in Bob Tasker III's trailer, letting him know that his run is being disallowed, his intake manifold is illegal, and we're going to go into a lot of detail about this going forward, but this is all happening concurrently to Tony and I talking to Doug Coletta on our stage, knowing that Bob Tasker III is going to be our second guest. And so, as we're talking to Doug Coletta, who doesn't have a worry in the world, he's loving life these days, Bob is in this, you know, incredibly heated meeting with the tech department. And so we finish with Doug Coletta's conversation and are kind of promptly told that Bob's not coming. And we didn't know why. We didn't, again, have any inkling that anything was going on. We thought maybe another commitment had popped up, something had happened. So Tony and I are basically like, they tell us, okay, well, you get like a minute and a half from this commercial break. And we said, okay, we'll come back. And obviously we have plenty of things we can talk about. So this will be fine. We'll just fill our second segment, our second half of the show with some conversation about different teams and the weekend and the race. And we'll move on from there. Well, 30 seconds before we come back, Bob shows up and he sits down on the stage. And I said, hey, good morning, Bob. And it was very clear by his body language that he was not happy. And he said, you know, I have some things to say. And I thought, okay, this is going to be great. I thought this is like, cool, maybe him and Proc had a little tete-a-tete or something. I don't know, because there was some tension there after the Vegas race. And lo and behold, we come back from commercial. I introduce him, and Bob launches right into it about how his intake manifold has been deemed illegal because of the color that it is, and that he has had his parts confiscated, and that he has no more parts to run the race, and that he is going to leave. And you can imagine, I was kind of slack-jawed at the time. I was looking across at Tony, and his jaw was kind of hanging down, because again, we had no warning this was coming. We had no inkling this was coming. And I was like, whoa. So we kind of asked Bob to like back up and go into the story a little bit more, which he did. And so this is the first part of this I want to get into, which is the brilliance of what Bob Tasca did on this Saturday morning. Because a lot of guys, after going through what they went through in the pit area, would have 100% told us to pound sand and would have not come on this morning chat show that Tony and I are doing live at the racetrack. Now, meanwhile, this is going out live over YouTube. It's going out live over our NHRA, you know, Fast and AVOD channels, like the Tubi channel, the Roku channel, Plex, all that stuff. So there's these things draw a good audience. So there's a lot of people watching. So immediately, my phone starts binging back, and people are like, "What the hell's going on?" I'm like, I'm learning about it as quickly as they are. So he's going off on this rant, and what is brilliant about what Bob did to start with is that he came and sat down and did this because he set the narrative. He seized the initiative, and as we all know in this world, when something happens, the first side to kind of seize the initiative of telling the story is the one that's going to get the most prominent recognition for their side of the story. Let's say that. So I give Bob full credit for this. And so the narrative is they are telling me my intake manifold is illegal because of the color that it is, and that the color doesn't match, and that these pieces need to be used unaltered, unchanged from the delivery point that we get them from the manufacturer. In this case, Alan Johnson. And so he said, you know, the tech department was telling me because it's a different color, I can't run it, and that it was illegal, and that my Q2 run is probably going to be thrown out, which is like another woe. And so in my ear, our director, Chris Meadows, a couple minutes, not even that, maybe 30 seconds later, said, yeah, his run is being thrown out. Like, as we speak, they just told us that. So then I say, well, Bob, yeah, you're right. That run is being disqualified. And so, you know, he was pretty adamant on the fact that he and his team were going to load up because they didn't have any other intake manifolds. They did not feel as though in that moment, because even Tony suggested, hey, why don't you just get another, you know, borrow an intake manifold from another team that uses one. And Bob's point was like, hey, like we have all these fuel nozzles and we have all this nozzling and all the math is already done and how these things work. And, you know, he had trepidation in the moment of putting another intake manifold on it and then, you know, not having the fuel nozzling right and then having some sort of a massive engine failure and problem and that would cost them gazillions of dollars. And so this was a half hour discussion, like live in front of everybody. And as you can imagine, things very rapidly got interesting. So, you know, again, people were just recording this stuff and putting it on their phones, and it was on Twitter, it was on any social media platform you could imagine within moments. And so that was a bit of a first in NHRA history, that something that we all kind of lived this moment real time. Because typically what happens here in a situation like this, you know, the team makes a statement NHRA makes a statement. Maybe there's a video made later in the day. Maybe there isn't. But like to have this moment happening right in front of us and have it happening in real time where all of us were getting it at the same time was a first. In my mind, I've never seen anything else like it. And it was pretty wild to be right there in the middle of it. So the other thing I'm going to say is Bob Tasca, it's one of the few teams that, you know, I'm going to pack up and leave is not an idle threat. I say that because of his relationship with Jim Farley that runs a Ford Motor Company. Like, Jim's going to stand behind Bob when he makes a decision like that. There are other teams that have obviously big sponsorships that would likely have to pay back a sponsor for a race that they decided to withdraw from. It would come off the top of their deal. I don't think Bob's in that position. So, you know, when he was telling us, hey, I think we're in the mindset that we're probably going to pack up and go, or just pack the car up and you know, sit in the stands and watch the rest of the event. I wasn't putting that past him. You know, and again, his concern was that they're going to put some untested, you know, untried thing on their car and it's going to have a major negative impact, which could happen. There's no doubt about it that his what he was saying was possible, that could happen. Things could go wrong. Now, I want to stick with one other point here. His argument on the color of the intake manifold being the major problem was another stroke of genius to use here to tell this story to the general public, especially when you know you're telling it first, because it takes it down to a very base level that any Joe Schmo can understand at home. And we're going to get into the reason why the intake manifold was not legal. And it wasn't legal. Like, we can get that out of the way right now. Factually stating, the intake manifold that was on the car does not meet the letter of the rules, and I'll get to why in a minute. The color is a byproduct of why it was illegal. But when you talk about simple things, if you want to simplify things to a general audience, he did it brilliantly. When you talk about saying, well, it's the wrong color, you know, that's what they're telling me. They're telling me it's the wrong color, so I can't use it. So it's just such a smart way to present this thing, again, to build a case. And I've, you know, spent enough time of you know, my life around drag racers now that I will tell you that there is no more persuasive, passionate arguer than a drag racer that feels as though they have been wronged by the rules, by a race director's decision, by anything. These are guys that maybe a lot of them don't like to say two words, but in these scenarios, they could go and argue a case in front of the Supreme Court. And so that's what we got. I mean, we got the Bob Tasca versus the world kind of argument in this forum. And, you know, Tony and I were asking the best questions we could at the time because we're trying to put the pieces together, I think, in our own heads, wondering what is going on here. Like, it was even confusing to me to a degree when I had to start to sift through it in my own mind when he keeps saying the color, the color, the color. And it's like, what is the real root here? Because the color is something, but the color is definitely not the real root here. And I think Tony and I did an admirable job. At least I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I think we did ask good questions to get to the furthest root that we could to what happened. And so basically, you know, Bob pleads his case, which was, I mean, listen, it was a convincing case. It was a guy being, you know, held down by the man. You know, the NHRA is holding this guy down. They're holding him back. They don't like him for some reason. I don't know what I did wrong, but these guys got it out for me, and now they won't let me run my intake manifold, and now I don't have enough parts, and now I'm just going to go home, and that's going to be the thing, and we're going to figure out what to do next. Obviously, that did not happen, and we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But when we finished that 30 minutes, you know, Bob got up and skedaddled back to his pit area. I ran into Joe Costello. Joe Costello, I mean, as this is happening, it was like a burning building. People heard about what was going on, and all of a sudden, we had a collection of media people and PR people and fans, I mean, they were coming from all corners to listen to this because it was incredible. When do you get the chance for this to happen? Because it doesn't happen. Like, a guy walks out of a meeting where he's told his car is illegal, and we put him immediately on a live stage, and he goes right into it. I mean, it was magical. So I get off the stage, and I'm talking to Joe. And Joe said, hey, listen, I have a Wilson intake manifold. He's got this Project Pontiac. If you're familiar with Joe Costello, he's got a really cool, you know, Pro Street style Pontiac Firebird. I believe they're going to run Super Street with it. But he's got this whole project going on, and Gary Stennett's involved in doing the motor. And one of the things Joe said, he's like, you know, the interior runners of the intake manifold are like, they're rough. They're like a rough surface. And he's like, they're treated, or there's something done to them. I'm like, okay. So then I contacted my buddy Mike Galimi, who is the brand director of Hot Rod Magazine, a guy who's building a Dragon Drive car. He also has a Wilson intake manifold. And he's like, yeah. He's like, the runners are, you know, the inside of the intake, where the air goes through the runners, they're called. Those are intake runners. They're made of a rough. They're like roughed up. They're like, you know, textured, if you will. And so when we talk about an intake manifold on a top fuel dragster or a nitro funny car, these are made out of cast magnesium. They're not a billet piece. It is a cast magnesium big one piece unit, and it is smooth. Okay, the runner areas, the surface of the thing, generally speaking, is smooth. So one of the things that has been learned over the years as a speed secret, if you will, whatever you want to call it, at least in, you know, lower horsepower, gasoline burning, alcohol burning engines, I'm not talking about nitro engines yet, is that on the inside of an intake manifold, if the intake runners are too smooth, meaning if there's like a polished kind of mirror glass surface in there, the fuel can actually stick to it like a water on your windshield when you're going down the highway. If you roughen that surface up, it does not allow the fuel to kind of stick to the sides of the manifold, and it keeps the air tumbling around, so it can help to better atomize the fuel as it heads down into your engine, into the cylinder heads, and ultimately through the cylinder heads and into the combustion chamber. Now, I bring Wilson intake manifolds up because Bob specifically told us that his intake manifolds were flowed, put on a flow bench and measured for flow at Wilson. So if we start to do a little backwards math here and start to understand what might have happened, why is there a color change in this intake manifold? Is it because maybe the color that the intake is supposed to be, which is a magnesium intake that is treated with a chemical called Dow-7, Dow-7 is an antioxidant. It kind of seals the magnesium from degrading from whatever oxygenation or whatever happens to magnesium. If you've ever had magnesium wheels, you know that they kind of a pain. You have to keep them polished because they will like oxidize instantaneously. But Dow-7 is applied to this stuff to basically protect it. So if some process is used and the Dow-7 is knocked off, you know what happens? The color changes. So now we're talking about a color change like Bob has talked about. He said the colors changed, it would let me use it. Well, now we have to ask why the color changed. So Bob actually ends up telling us in a roundabout way about the color change at the end of this Saturday that begins with this interview. But the reason, in my opinion, the color changed was that at Wilson, they kind of texturized the thing. They kind of used the same, if not the same process, some other process, which the NHRA identified as media blasting, which means you shoot it with walnut shells, you shoot it with glass beads, or you shoot it with, you know, I don't think they would use steel shot, but you shoot it with soda, you use some medium, and you blast it. And you blast that medium on there. What the medium does is it breaks up the surface, it creates some rough surface, it gets rid of that smooth cast finish that was on this thing and roughens it up, just like Wilson does to the rest of their intake manifolds. And again, the theory being that this helps with air and fuel. Now, in a nitro funny car, a top fuel dragster, the consumption of fuel is exponentially higher than you'll ever find in a gasoline engine. So, does this actually improve the performance of the thing? You know, I guess we kind of learned it didn't later on Saturday, and I'll get into that in a few minutes, but the idea is, and the rule states, that the intake manifold must be used as it is delivered, must be used as it is manufactured, bolted on the engine. Bob did mention a couple of things. The teams do lap the intake manifolds, meaning they will effectively sand them to a degree to get them to seal properly and seat properly. Any sort of cast part maybe has a tiny bit of variation to it, has a tiny bit of plus minus that you need to clean up. But that is a sealing surface we're talking about, not the actual intake runner where the fuel and the air are passing through. So we've kind of established a couple things now. We've established, one, that the color of the intake manifold did change. Two, we've established that it likely changed because the intake manifold was treated somehow. It was media blasted, according to the NHRA statement. Again, whether that was glass beading, whether that was soda blasting, I don't know what the medium was that was used, but they say it was media blasted. So that means it's modified. And that means, because it's modified, it means it's illegal. Before we move on to the next step on this, I do want to say one other thing. I think our drivers undersell their strength of their words, the strength of their own personalities, and the strength of their statements to our fan bases. And I mean this with love and respect, because by the time Bob got done, the court of public opinion was, it was a unanimous vote for Bob by the time he got done with Tony and I. So if the drivers out there, you know, there may be some business opportunities you guys are missing out on by pitching products, because as history has shown, and most clearly in this example, when you guys get up on the chip and start to sell either a story, yourself, whatever, people are buying it. So we get done with the interview. The color story is kind of dominating the headlines. We just talked about how the color has and was changed. And now we need to talk about the next part of this story, which is, you know, was Bob being targeted by the company? Do people at the NHRA have it out for Bob Tasca? Is there a conspiracy theory or a conspiracy to, you know, suppress Bob Tasca III in NHRA drag racing? I guess the first answer I would give to that is, how could you possibly believe that if the same company placed him on a stage minutes after they disqualified his car? If the idea was to keep Bob Tasca down and get him out of there, they would have told him to pack up and go, and they certainly would have placed him in a public forum to broadcast to thousands and thousands of people, which would then multiply itself 100 times on the internet. The second thing is, people are like, oh, well, you know, they're mad at him because he went 341.6 down there at Bradenton before the season started. Honest to God, everybody's over that. Okay, there is not a lingering anything regarding preseason races. We are well into our season. Everybody's concentrating on what we do here and in our own work and our own stuff. And there is not a single person that's running around like with a checklist of people that they want to see, you know, hampered or held back or whatever in any form. Okay. So the idea that it's like, yep, NHRA is holding them back, this is what they do, it's like, that's crazy. This guy is a corporately sponsored Ford racer, exceptionally high profile, has a huge fan base of an entire quadrant of a country that follows this guy's every breathe and move at the racetrack, which we certainly saw over the course of last weekend. And the idea that you'd want to do something as a company to cause this guy grief is insane. It's like the same thing as last year with Tony Stewart with the Magnetos and his A-fuel car. They were illegal, so they got taken out. You move on. This is racing. This is what happens. What did we just see with IndyCar? I mean, my God, the IndyCar thing over the last couple of weeks has been absolutely bonkers. And that was a situation where it wasn't detected till 6 weeks after it happened. This was, I don't know, 8 hours after it happened was when everything was going on in our NHRA world in Charlotte. So the idea of some sort of a conspiracy theory is insane. Now, I will say this. Ever since that 341.6 run at Bradenton, and anybody with a upright conscience will tell you this, there have been rumors about the intake manifold on that car since that event, up, down, and sideways. And anybody who tells you there haven't been is full of garbage. Whispers around the pit area, rumors this and that. Oh, the intake's illegal. Well, they had illegal parts on that car. They had an illegal intake on that car. No one could tell you how. No one could tell you why. No one could tell you who made it. But there was a rumor that they had an illegal intake manifold on that car in Bradenton, Florida at that race. It was never proven. It was never whatevered. Was it the intake manifold that became a problem in Charlotte? Maybe. Who knows? But it wasn't like it was some whiz-bang one-off part that anybody else saw. Now, if they only ran it once and no one ever saw it again, I can't speak to that. But the idea was, and maybe is, and the question is, you know, why did the tech department decide to look at Bob on this day in Charlotte, North Carolina? Is it because there was such a murmur going on in the pits that people were like, you got to look at this thing, you got to check this thing, you got to look at this thing? I don't know. That part I can't speak to. I cannot speak to the why that this was the moment they decided to look at Bob's car. I do believe other cars were checked. I think Bob said as much in his interview. It wasn't just a single car. But I also know it is not an organized conspiracy against Bob Tasca III. So, the next point to make here is about rules enforcement. And in my decades in this sport, I have seen it done the right way, and I have seen it done the wrong way. And in my opinion, which is what all this is really, but in my opinion, the only way you can enforce a rule book is with the words in the rule book. And I say that because the argument becomes, well, how do you know that's a performance advantage, that their intake manifold, you know, was media blasted? Well, you don't. But when the rule says it has to be run as delivered, that's the rule. And so over my time in the sport, what I have seen is I have seen people enforce rule books in this straight up manner where it's like, this is what it says. This is what it is. This is how it's going to go. And those are the people that make the decisive decision and you move on. The wrong way to enforce rules in drag racing is to start putting your own emotional and or speculative spin on things. That can never happen. For instance, if they say, well, yeah, it probably doesn't do anything anyway, go ahead. Now we have a big problem. And we have a big problem because it begins to creep the door open for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Because once you deviate from you have to run this thing as delivered to, well, I don't think it has a performance advantage anyway, what's that to prevent the next guy from trying something maybe more extreme and the guy after that trying something more extreme? You create a slippery slope. So my point is, you know, right, wrong, or otherwise, if the rule is the intake manifold must be installed as delivered from the manufacturer, that's it. And the color change that we keep going back to was indicative of the fact that something was done to it. And that something, in my opinion, and as was stated in the NHRA rulebook, was media blasting to try to create a bit of a rougher surface to, again, do the things we talked about just a couple minutes ago. So, you know, the idea that that it wasn't just like, okay, well, try it again, I feel like that was the right move. Now, one of the things Bob said, and I do not have, and I'm not contesting Bob for saying this, and I'm not contesting Aaron Brooks, because Aaron Brooks said the same thing. He said, hey, listen, they asked to look at this stuff in Gainesville. They looked at it and gave it back to us and didn't say anything. If that's the case, that's another wrinkle to this story that is problematic in a couple of ways. I mean, it's if you're going to hand somebody back something that they can't run, you got to tell them they can't run it. You know, Bob and Aaron were both unified on that front in terms of like, hey, they saw stuff and didn't say anything. So on that front, and I'm not contesting them because I have no reason to. They both said the same thing. And so maybe there was a level of confusion there. It still doesn't make the intake manifold not illegal. But if they had been told right then and there in Gainesville, like, hey, bro, you can't do this, then it might have saved them. It might have saved them some time and grief and aggravation in Charlotte. So we later find out that they're going to borrow an intake manifold from Capco. So Richard Hogan, Steve Torrance, and the boys pull this thing off one of their spare engines with a nozzling chart and everything and hand it to them. And they end up, of course, going 338 miles an hour with this thing right off the shelf, resetting the track record and winning the Mission Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge. And this is where another interesting thing happens. Bob is beyond fired up, as well he should have been. I mean, for all of us, it was a pretty epic way for this story to take another turn for the awesome, right? And so he wins the thing, blows the track record into the weeds on speed, and then gets out of the car and he's talking about, hey, listen, this wasn't just me and my team racing these three cars. It was me and my team racing the NHRA, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, I get here this morning and there's this BS deal about the texture of my intake manifold. And I went, huh. When he said that, I went, okay, now we've gotten back to where it goes. Now, that's kind of it, right? We've officially determined that it was the texture of the intake manifold that was the problem. When he said that, it's like this completes the loop. The color, and I'm not taking a shot. I mean, I admire Bob for this. When he got up there on the stage with us, he locked in on there telling me I can't run it because the color's wrong. And it was the absolute perfect play at that time. Speaking to an audience that you want to understand what you feel is a ridiculous problem, you give them the truth. That was a truthful thing he said. He did say that it was the color, and the color was altered, and that was one of the issues. So he wasn't lying to anybody, but he was very parsimonious with that line, and it worked, and it landed very well with the general public. I can tell you that from all the social media stuff that happened. But he did say texture after he won the Mission Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge with the intake manifold from Steve Torrance. And, you know, really, I don't want to say that everybody's kind of over this now, but I think we are. I mean, to me, I was very happy that that team went out there and performed with that intake manifold on their race car, because it does 100 different things. But the biggest things it does is silences anybody in the pits that was going to whisper about them having illegal parts and that's why the car was fast. Nope. They put that Torrance piece on there and he was faster than everybody by a long shot. It silences everybody at home that thinks he's cheating, he's doing anything wrong. Nope. Not happening. Factory built part on engine 338. And, you know, it also silences those people that are like, see, this is exactly what NHRA wanted. He went out there and failed. No, he went out there and won the race. Two other things I want to talk about here real quick. One, there is a ridiculous notion that he's like, oh, man, people are out there commenting like, oh, man, I bet NHRA hated that. Why? Like, why would NHRA hate that? You think there's a guy in the back of the room that's like, you know, tearing his, you know, race program together and throwing it on the ground saying, he's outsmarted us again. No, it's a freaking great way to end the story. If NHRA was not happy about it, why would we post it all over social media? Why would they let me crack the joke when I'm making the call to say they're probably going to have to pay the guy in magnesium? You know, it's a bonkers notion that there are people that are actively like just trying to like suppress Bob Tasca III. It is beyond insane. So no, there was nobody that threw their hat on the ground or spit into the wind when Bob Tasca went out there and won the Mission Too Fast, Too Tasty challenge on Saturday. In fact, there was probably a lot of relief. And there's a lot of relief when something like this happens because it just puts everybody's fears to rest. You can't argue against success. So that's what happened. And I told you at the start of this thing, I was going to tell you why that this ultimately was a very good thing that happened on Saturday in Charlotte. And there's a very simple reason for it. If Bob Tasca III's car had gone 340 miles an hour at one of our events so far this season and gets inspected, which you know it will when it happens, and that intake manifold that was on the car on Friday night was on it, it would be a disaster for everybody, right? It is one thing to have a second round qualifying session run disallowed with a whole other day of qualifying to follow to put yourself back in a good spot and make sure your car's performance is correct. It is another thing to make an iconic run, which when it happens, that 340 will be an iconic run in drag racing history, and then to have a press release come out a couple hours later that says, oh, by the way, the intake manifold was media blasted and the run does not count. If that had happened, it would have been horrendous for the sanctioning body, for the team, for the driver, I'd argue for the sport, because it calls into question everything at that point. So I'm telling you right now, the world of drag racing, at least the NHRA funny car world of drag racing, dodged a massive bullet by having this discovery made in Charlotte. I do fully think that car is going to run 340 this season. It's not going to take anything but a cool night at a place like Epping, New Hampshire, Sonoma, California, Dallas in the fall. We had night qualifying in Seattle this year. I mean, you know, we can go down the line of places where these huge runs can happen, where unpredictable weather can be our friend. And it would just be such a shame to take a moment of celebration, because it will be a moment of mass celebration in the NHRA world when it happens, and then have it turned on its head by going, oh, by the way, illegal parts on the car. It would, just imagine it. I mean, it'd be terrible. So that's why this was ultimately, as wacko and uncomfortable and crazy as it was, a good thing that it happened in Charlotte and that everybody's been able to move on. I think it was a watershed moment for us on Saturday. I think it's one of those things that changes the game a little bit. You know, when we're able to do things that we've never been able to do before, in that we're bringing you this live show and this dude comes on and just in a way that you will never, ever see a racer after time to chill out and think about it and talk to his PR people and whatnot, deliver a message. It was phenomenal. And to be sitting there going like, whoa, I mean, it's very rare. I'm not trying to sound like a jerk, but it's very rare to sit down with a driver and be kind of blown back in your seat with stuff that you had no clue was happening. Obviously, in my job and Tony Pedregon's job, we stay informed on a lot of different things, a lot of different big things behind the scenes that haven't happened yet that are going to happen, that are coming along in the sport, like a lot of stuff we got to keep our mouth shut about internally and externally. You know, we have to be conscious of people's needs in that pit area too, and what they're working on and what they got going on. So when you get somebody up there hot and bothered and ready to go, and they just let it fly, holy cow, that was so cool. It was so cool. Then he goes out there and wins the thing, 338 miles an hour, puts it all to bed, and that's that. It was pretty amazing. So that's what I wanted to do today. I wanted to take you through this thing from my perspective and give you some depth to it. We started with the color conversation. We found out about media blasting. And then we ended with Bob mentioning the word texture when talking about the problem in his winning interview of the Mission Too Fast, Too Tasty Challenge. So it was a very, very eventful Saturday at ZMAX Dragway. And next week on the NHRA Insider, I will definitely be talking more about the race. But I thought you might find this internal tour with some opinions, some internal fact, and some internal perspective kind of interesting, because it was, in my mind, a top 5 to 10 most interesting moment in my drag racing career to be involved in and to track and follow and to put the pieces together on. So that's that. I will be back next week. The NHRA Insider will continue. We'll have some driver guests, of course, maybe grab a crew chief or two as well. It's going to be a fun show. We'll be talking about 2-wide and 4-wide drag racing, because we do have the Route 66 Nationals coming up, but we got time. We'll be talking about the 4-wide Nationals, the victors, and those teams that at this point in the season really got to find their groove, because we are now deep enough into it where we're starting to look more seriously at points and position and performance. As always, thanks for listening to the NHRA Insider Podcast presented by Speedmaster. I'm Brian Lones. I'll be back next week. A little less controversy, but still the same amount of insight. Thanks for listening.